Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 103.9 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here. So much more importantly, Cindy Mitchum. If the name sounds familiar, that last name sounds familiar. She is the daughter of John Mitchum and the niece of Robert Mitchum. And, you know, to have somebody on who's the daughter and niece of legends is something special. And again, we're going to be talking about them ornery Mitchum boys. And that was a book put out by her dad that again is getting a lot of interest lately and talk about. And she's the keeper of the flame on this. And I'm thrilled to have you, Cindy Mitchum. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, well, listen, it's a pleasure for me to speak to you, and it just sounds like a wonderful project, and I'm sure a lot of work, but a labor of love.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. There's times where it's a little overwhelming, and then something will happen. I'll get a message from someone, or an old picture will pop up, and then I'll know exactly why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, the legacy that they left behind, your dad, his resume is a mile long, and of course your uncle's is a mile long. There's a lot of film work there, but there really should be a companion book to go along with all the people who are there that are fans of theirs. And you know what? It's interesting about your dad and your uncle is that they do have millennial fans. You know, I have sons and they have some friends that are filmmakers, and they both love your dad and love your uncle. Something about the Mitchums, and maybe it's the history behind that. And again, from what I understand, they traveled the rails. They were like running into Woody Guthrie, and before they made it big, they were adventurers. They were travelers. They were trying to make it. These aren't, you know, necessarily silver spoon guys. These are guys that that knows what the hobo's life is like, basically. And that's fascinating for people. Am I right or
well,
wrong?
You're absolutely spot on. And as far as the millennials go, it's rather interesting and amusing to me that because of all the Dirty Harry pictures, they know my father far more than they know my uncle.
Right, that's right.
They understand when they realize the love and hate on the knuckles, then they can associate that to Uncle Bob. They know that, but they don't know that it's him that was in Night of the Hunter originally.
Yeah. You know, your dad was a wonderful actor. It just came across very real and different. He could play different roles. And yeah, I mean,
he adored that. One of the major questions I always get is, was there jealousy between the two brothers? Because Uncle Bob was such a huge global star and Dad was a character actor. And the answer to that is simply no. They adored each other. And Dad was very proud of the fact that he was such a versatile character actor. He loved it when someone would look at him and say, don't I know you? And he'd tell them that he was their butcher or something. He just got great joy with that he could. And he was able to do things Uncle Bob couldn't. He could go anywhere. And Uncle Bob was pretty much restricted without having fans or other problems associated with being such a world-known star.
You know, not to interrupt, but there's a term that I've heard from a lot of jazz stars, you know, people that are well-respected in their field, they're known. There's an expression called jazz famous. And when I think of your dad, I think of your dad as being jazz famous. Everyone who's in the know, actors, directors, people in insiders in Hollywood, they all know who he is. And real fans, I mean, that really appreciate acting and cinema and television and pop culture, they know who your dad is. But
absolutely.
Again, the jazz famous guys can have normal lives and they can go do their own shopping and they can do things. Does that fit your dad?
Absolutely, to a T. And I've had fans tell me things about him and recite his lines of shows I didn't even know that he did. He IMDb does not do him justice. Dad did over 800 TV episodes and over 60 major movies.
Wow.
And yeah, and in addition to that, he was nominated for a Grammy for his poetry. He wrote the only album that John Wayne ever recorded, America, Why I Love Her. And he wrote a piece for Ken Curtis called Ode to a Mule. Ken was a fabulous tenor singer. He was with the Sons of the Pioneers for years, and they wanted him to do, when he was doing Gunsmoke, they wanted him to do an album with a singing voice, but do one particular piece as Festus. So Ken specifically asked Dad to write him a poem for him to do on that album.
Wow. Yeah, just, I mean, wow. I mean, you talking about putting a career, was your dad a workaholic?
Workaholic has a connotation of effort or some sort of, you know, not liking it so much. Dad, you couldn't stop him from writing or from singing or from acting if your heart depended on it. He was very disciplined. He would get up and write something before 6 o'clock every morning, whether it was a song or a poem or a story. So, but it was just something that he loved to do. It was, he volunteered constantly to, whether it was to put on benefits, like even for the Watts riots, he put on a huge benefit to restore the boys' home that was destroyed. So he was constantly busy.
Yeah, let me remind folks that are just tuning in a little late or maybe just turning on their radios. Frank McKay here. Very special guest is Cindy Mitchum, and she's the daughter of the late, great John Mitchum and the niece of the late, great Robert Mitchum. And you know, fans of Clint Eastwood will know her dad, not just Dirty Harry, but if memory serves me, The Outlaw Josie Wales, which was one of my favorite movies growing up, High Plains Drifter, right? Your dad was in that.
That was Dad's favorite line.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I mean, just, you know, he was in a lot of movies and a lot of different type of movies. Again, Frank McKay here with Cindy Mitchum, thrilled to have her. And again, the name of the book that her dad put together. And I imagine that's a labor of love on his part too. Them ornery Mitchum boys, and boy, were they ever storybook careers, but storybook lives that went along with them. And they just don't make people like that anymore. And it is just a legendary career that the two of them had, and their, you know, their personal life, their life in order to make it, in order to get there, is just admirable. It's just amazing. What do you remember about your dad and the book? Do you remember him putting together the book originally? Were you too young when he was doing that? Or?
Oh no, I was married and had children when he finally put it together, and I'm so grateful that he did. My husband and I keep saying it's the family Bible, and it's interesting. So many of my cousins and second cousins have no idea of the history and lineage, and it's right there for everybody to be able to see. As you had mentioned earlier, that they rode the rails, and by the time my dad was 16, he'd gone back and forth from the East Coast to the West Coast 4 times. They were raised in Bridgeport, Connecticut, in New York, and in Rising Sun, Delaware. That was their basic home turf. And when the Depression hit, their oldest sister, my Aunt Julie, had left home when she was 12 to join a vaudeville dance team. And she had tap danced across the country and had, at 15, married a sailor. And he ended up being stationed in Long Beach. So when the Depression hit, my grandmother and her new husband and new baby drove the car across the country to Long Beach, but there wasn't room in the car for Dad and Uncle Bob, kind of like the Beverly Hillbillies. So they got on their first cross-country hobo trip, and it was quite a trip. So Uncle Bob had done it at one point, and it's, some of the fans may have heard the story, and it is a very true story, that he was arrested and put on a chain gang in Georgia when he was 17.
What was the charge? I remember that, you know, him having done...
He was arrested for vagrancy. And remember, he was only 17.
Yeah.
He was arrested for vagrancy, was put in the jailhouse on a Wednesday, and didn't go before the judge until Monday. And the judge then said that the charges were for allegedly robbing a shoe store. So Uncle Bob stood up and said, "Excuse me, Your Honor, but when did this alleged robbery take place?" And the judge said, "Friday." So Uncle Bob, being his true self, said, "If you check your record, you've been housing me since Wednesday." And people in the courtroom, just like you did, started to chuckle and embarrass the judge, and he put him on a chain gang. I mean, we're talking like, you know, chains and the guy with the rifle staring at him, which he escaped from.
I mean, the real.
Yeah,
real life.
Exactly. And he escaped, and he swam through the swamps. And because of the big cuffs on his ankles going through the swamps, he developed gangrene in his legs. And the doctor, when he finally got back to my grandmother, the doctor wanted to amputate his leg. And my little Norwegian grandmother said absolutely not, and went out into the woods and gathered the herbs and made a poultice and saved his leg.
Wow. Just wow. I mean, this is... You know, this is movie stuff. I know we were talking off mic a bit and saying that there's too many stories to fit into a movie, but I mean, maybe multiple movies or whatever. But I mean, these are stories that you just don't hear anymore. And, you know, first of all, somebody being put on a chain gang at 17 years old, I mean, you got to do some really heavy stuff.
Well, on the flip side of that, by the time they got to Long Beach, dad ended up going to Long Beach Polytechnic High. And he just loved the sea. Their stepfather was a major in the British Army, but their grandfather was a Norwegian sea captain, my grandmother's father. So they were raised around that environment. So my father just adored the sea. And the major, his stepfather, got him a job. He was 16 at that point, on a three-masted schooner based out of L.A. And Dad got a job going down what was supposed to be a fun little jaunt down to Mexico with some high-end celebrities and dignitaries. And they had not any issues going down to Mexico. They got there, and Dad got off and went into a cantina. And somebody gave him a bad time, and he gave him a bad time back. And it ended up being one of the governor of Mexico's hitmen.
Wow.
That could have shot Dad in the back. And so he gets up back on the ship, and going back from Mexico back up to L.A., they not only hit a hurricane, which was rather rough and broke one of the masts in the ship. Then they ran out of gas, and while they were puttering around, just bobbing around like a cork, a sperm whale started hitting the ship. So that was just on a three-day cruise, kind of like Gilligan's Island.
Wow.
That was all one weekend's adventure for my father.
It's just unbelievable. Let me remind folks again, if you're just tuning in, just turning on your radios a little late, Cindy Mitchum is the voice that you're hearing. And she's the keeper of the flame of the Mitchum stories, and her legendary father is John Mitchum, and legendary uncle, I should say, is Robert Mitchum. Them Ornery Mitchum Boys is the name of the book, and it's Cindy is doing what she can to put it into back into book form, or to put it into some kind of documentary form. Whatever it is, it's got to be out. And again, Frank McKay here with Cindy Mitchum. Your dad was born in 1919, and I know that a lot of people that were born in 1919 never made it past a couple of days. That was the polio. Is that right? Am I right on that?
Well, actually, there's a when my grandmother was pregnant with Uncle Bob, there was the big flu influenza epidemic going on. And she and my grandfather and Aunt Julie were living down in Charleston. So she took the train up to Bridgeport, where her Norwegian grandparents lived. And Uncle Bob was born in Bridgeport just to get away from that problem. And they went back down to Charleston. And my grandmother was barely pregnant with my dad when my grandfather was tragically killed in a train accident in the Navy train yard. And so here was this little tiny Norwegian immigrant with a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old and finding out that she was just pregnant. And she moved back. She left and went back up to Bridgeport again to be with her parents. And because of the trauma, my father was born 2 or 3 months early, which in 1919 would have been a difficult situation to begin with. But my great aunt, his aunt, fell asleep on her watch duty with him, and the water bottle sprung a leak, and he developed pneumonia in the middle of the night. So my father, who ended up having a 22-inch neck, actually was born 3 pounds in 1919 and with pneumonia and managed to survive. They were tough guys.
Wow. Just wow. Yeah, you're not kidding. I mean, from the day he was born, he was fighting something, you know, and just...
Yeah, and one of the very famous stories between them was Uncle Bob was 6, so Dad was 4, and my grandmother allowed them to walk down to the corner to put a letter in the mailbox, and Uncle Bob let go of Dad's hand, and he wandered out into the middle of the street and got hit by a car, and he tried to stand up and got run over by a second car. Well, you have to remember that cars then were not as cars are today, right. Thank God.
Yeah.
But still, it was tremendous. And Uncle Bob, 6 years old, ran the block back to my grandmother and blurted out at her that Jack's been hit, but he ain't dead yet.
Oh, my God.
So my poor grandmother went running down, and there was my dad, and he ended up with a steel plate in his skull. So that point, that's 1923. We're still not talking about high-end medical help here.
Wow.
And his jaw was completely shattered, so they wired his mouth shut. And that's why if you look at pictures of him, why his lower lip is kind of twisted funny is because his head was run over by a car.
You know, I always thought maybe he had a Bell's palsy or something somewhere along the line.
No,
yeah,
no.
Just what an amazing... man, your dad was, and just to have the career, and your uncle too. I mean, just.
Well, even at his career started at that point. He realized with his mouth wired shut in the hospital that if he sang, it would make the other patients and the nurses happy. So when he got out of the hospital, he told Uncle Bob, and Uncle Bob was the businessman of the two, and Uncle Bob put Dad on a street corner with a tin can to get tips and had Dad singing on street corners. And well, they were making great money at 4 and 6 until my grandmother found out and put a stop to it.
Wow. Let me remind folks of who they're listening to. Cindy Mitchum is the daughter of John Mitchum, the late, great John Mitchum, actor and poet and so much more. Adventurer and man's man. You talk about not making them like they used to. They don't make John Mitchums or Robert Mitchums like they used to. They rode the rails. They survived. He survived a pneumonia when he was a baby and a double car hit at 4 years old and lived to 82. Right? Do I have that right? 82.
Yeah, he lived to be 82. Uncle Bob died a month shy of his 80th birthday, and Dad lived to be 82. And
that's the time when people
rough of a life and as rough as they treated their bodies, they weren't nice to themselves.
Yeah, you're not kidding. Frank McKay here once again with Cindy Mitchum. Cindy, we're coming up on a break. Do we have you for a second segment?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, let me again tell everyone about them Ornery Mitchum boys. That's a book that Cindy's dad put together, and it had hundreds and hundreds of pictures. And again, Cindy is the keeper of the flame, and trying to I guess figure out the best way to get this story to the public. And it's either it's too big maybe for a documentary, but something tells me you gotta contact Ken Burns or something like this. I mean, this is a major undertaking, not to get it out, but to do it right. Again, Frank McKay with Cindy Mitchum. We'll be back after this.
Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 1039 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone back to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here with Cindy Mitchum. And she's the keeper of the flames, or the flame, I should say, for them ornery Mitchum boys. And there's a book that her dad, John Mitchum, the late, great John Mitchum, the actor, the poet, the adventurer, the brother of Robert Mitchum, and that's her uncle, and the two of them together put together some unbelievable careers. Fans of Clint Eastwood know John Mitchum very well, but and I'll never be able to remember the numbers that she just told me, but over 800 television episodes and God knows how many movies, but is IMDb is a mile long, and it doesn't do him justice, as Cindy mentioned. Cindy, welcome back.
Thank you. It's wonderful being with you.
Yeah, well, same here. What are the numbers again? You had them kind of off the top of your head. 800 and what?
800 TV episodes and over 60 major movies. The first picture Dad ever did was in 1947, a thing called The Prairie.
Yeah, and what was the story behind that? I mean, was that something that he auditioned for? Is that something he kind of...
No, he was actually... It was the classic Hollywood story. He was actually walking down Hollywood Boulevard, and someone stopped him and asked him if he was an actor, and he said, no. And they said, do you want to be? And he said, how much does it pay? So there that was his first show. Neither he nor Uncle Bob had any aspirations to be actors at all. They really didn't, and during the war, they were both working at Lockheed, and Uncle Bob actually had hysterical blindness from the stress of being at Lockheed. He didn't do so well, but he had a dear friend, a young lady named Norma Jean. Other people may remember her as Marilyn, worked at Lockheed with him.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was interesting times, but Dad had no aspiration to be an actor. The reason Uncle Bob started is when they were living in Long Beach, their sister, who was the entertainer and the tap dancer, she loved to call herself a nightclub dame. She played piano and sang in seven different languages.
Wow.
But Julie got Uncle Bob to join the Long Beach Players Guild, and he didn't want to at all. He was happy. Dad and Bob spent their days on the beach flirting with girls and at night just having a good time. And she said, we really need men. And he said, what does that have to do with me? And she said, there's 30 women and one man. Think how lucky you'll be. So he joined. And that's where he was discovered and put in the first Hopalong Cassidy movie.
So when was that, as opposed to your dad getting met down the street, walking down the street? You know, where was the timeline when your Uncle Bobby got put into the movie, into Hoppy?
A few years ahead of time.
Yeah.
Uncle Bob did the Hoppy film a couple of years before that. And then in 1948 was the big marijuana bust, which was a huge setup.
Wow. Yeah, I mean...
They thought, Howard Hughes thought for sure that was going to ruin Uncle Bob's career, as did Uncle Bob. And Howard Hughes tried to sweep it under the rug. He tried to pay and have everything hushed up. And Uncle Bob said, no, it's nothing that I did. So he stood up for it, and he did his time in L.A. County Jail. And they thought, as I said, it was going to ruin his career, but it just skyrocketed it as being the bad boy.
Yeah, wow. You know, and back then, you know, I mean, the overreaction to anything that was weed related was.
He was the first celebrity ever arrested, and Harry Anslinger handpicked Uncle Bob to be his poster boy for the evils of marijuana. Which, if you do a little research, you realize that Anslinger was hand in hand with the Hearst, and the reason that they wanted hemp to be illegal was so that they would use the forest and the paper that Hearst himself owned. So he was just doing it for his own self-profit.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, just, just wow. I mean, just everything.
Yeah, and here we're coming full circle, and people are realizing what a spectacular fiber hemp is, and now it's the top investment people should be going is investing in hemp, because now it's President Trump just made it so with the farm bill that industrial hemp is legal. Hmm. Here we are full circle.
Yeah, just amazing. Did your Uncle Bobby and Dad? Well, actually, before I ask that, let me ask everyone to be reminded that Cindy Mitchum is our very special guest. Them Ornery Mitchum Boys is our subject, and it's a wonderful book by her dad, John Mitchum, the late great actor and poet and just, award winner. And of course, her dad, her uncle, Robert Mitchum, everyone knows her uncle Bobby. They make up them Ornery Mitchum Boys, and they rode the rails and fought, and they, they survived. Amazing, John to the age of 82 and Robert almost to the age of 80. Frank McKay here with Cindy Mitchum. Go back for one second to the poetry, because I mean that kind of really rounds out your dad. I mean, you think of your dad and Uncle Bobby as just being tough guys, but poetry. I mean, that's and by the way, to have John Wayne read the poetry. I mean, you talk about some tough guys, and you throw poetry in there, and all of a sudden it's like, what? It's a head scratching. But your dad was a complicated guy, right? He was a complex man.
He was. But as my husband has pointed out before, that it's very much in the Norwegian tradition to have men write poetry. And so that kind of gives a basis. My grandmother was an amazing woman. She made sure, even though she raised these three children herself, that they were well-rounded and had every opportunity and were given all of the arts, music, dance, writing. She was a beautiful, beautiful woman. So she instilled that. She gets the first credit there. But Dad wrote poetry, as you said. John Wayne recorded it. Dad was doing Chisholm with John Wayne and Forrest Tucker. And Forrest, people don't really realize, had a nightclub act. He had a beautiful voice. So he had asked Dad to write a special song for him to be kind of his signature song about Chicago, which is where Forrest was from. So Dad told him to come to his hotel room one night, and Forrest came over and Dad sang the song for him, and Forrest just loved it. And he said, "What else have you been doing?" So Dad recited a poem that he wrote. And this is back in the 60s. Dad had seen the American flag being burned in Central Park. And he wrote a piece called "Why Are You Marching, Son?" in tribute to all the military and the American history. And Tucker said, get back in the car. We're going to go back onto the set. And Dad said, "Why? We're done. We're having our scotch." And he said, "No, I want Wayne to hear this." So they went back to the set, and Wayne was playing chess with my cousin Chris Mitchum. And Forrest said, "You got to hear what Mitch just did." And so Dad recited the poem, and John Wayne started to cry. And Forrest Tucker looked at him and said, "If it means that much to you, do something about it." So Wayne stood up and shook Dad's hand and said, "I've never recorded anything, but I want to record your poetry." So they did an album. It took 4 years for John Wayne to finish recording it because of his lung cancer. He'd get to the studio, and some days it would just be too rough for him to speak. But they did it, and the first release sold over 100, and I believe 170,000 copies the first weekend.
Wow.
And that was without any advertising. There wasn't any internet. There wasn't any YouTube. There wasn't any anything at that point. So Dad was nominated for a Grammy for it. And as I said, Ken Curtis has recorded Dad's poetry. And when Dad passed away, Ernest Borgnine and A.C. Lyles, who was at that point the oldest producer in Hollywood, he'd been with Paramount since he was 17, and A.C. lived to be 90. They took me aside at an event called the Golden Boot, and they said, "What are you doing for your dad?" And I told them my husband was putting up a website, and they shook their heads, and they said, "That's not good enough. You have to do something special." So I'm looking at these two giants, and I said, "What am I supposed to do?" And A.C. said, "The world needs and deserves your father's poetry. You can't be selfish and keep it in a drawer," which was rather a daunting task. And Ernie said, "I tell you what you're going to do." He said, "Your dad's friends are each going to pick their favorite poem and record it." So we've got, my husband and I have been going across the country, and we have 50 recordings now of various people that Dad worked with, both in Western and film noir genres, and they've each picked the poem that meant the most to them and recorded it for me. We have, obviously, Ernie and Jim Drury, the Virginian, and Jane Russell picked one for me, and Peggy Stewart, who was the Queen of the Westerns, picked one for me, and I've got Robert Duvall did one.
Wow.
Jim Beaver recorded the Ode to a Mule that Ken Curtis had picked. I've got Ann Rutherford, who was in Gone with the Wind, picked one for me. Michael McGreevy, who did The Way West with Dad and Uncle Bob, did one for me. Jim Gammon, who's now gone, did one for me. As I said, there's 50 of these amazing people that have each picked one of Dad's poems. So we're working on getting that out. Again, it's so huge. Stefan Arngrim and I are working, trying to figure out, should we break it down into three different CDs? Should we do it all at once? How the best way to get it out there?
Yeah, Stefan Arngrim, people would know him as the actor, the child actor in Land of the Giants, but he's done so much more. Great guy. I've had him on the show recently. And again, a wonderful lady here, Cindy Mitchum, is our very special guest. And them ornery Mitchum boys is our subject for today. And it's something that needs more than one show to cover. That's for sure. A lot going on there. Frank McKay here with Cindy Mitchum. And talking to her about a late great father, John Mitchum, and uncle Robert Mitchum. How were they... towards the end, were they always close? I mean, were they always, where you'd see one, the other one was soon behind, or did they have like separate sets of friends? I mean, it must have been a combination, I would imagine.
Well, between the two of them, they talk to each other every day. They because of their childhood and because they depended on each other for survival, they were, and even though they were 2 years apart, they were as one. They just adored one another. But obviously they had separate lives, separate circles of friends and things. But between the two of them, there was only two times in Uncle Bob's film history that he ever stopped a production. And one was when my grandmother and my step-grandfather were in a horrific car accident. And Uncle Bob was filming in France and stopped the film and flew over because they thought both my grandparents were going to pass away. And the second time was when my mom was dying. And I had no idea Uncle Bob was going to be there. And I was in the cafeteria of the Valley Presbyterian Hospital, and I looked up and I saw him walking through the lobby, and the whole world started spinning, and there he was to be with my dad. He stopped production to be there with him.
Wow. It's touching how close they are, how close they were. You know, I have a brother that age. I'm the younger of the two, and we're about 2 years apart. And it was just the two of us, and you know, you get close. I mean, there's no question. But what they've been through, and you know, from the start, and to lose his dad while he was before he was born, right? He lost his dad before he was born.
Yeah, you never got to meet him.
Wow. And how about your grandmother? Did she get to see the success of both men? When did she pass?
Oh, she definitely got to see it, and she was so funny. She lived almost to be 100.
Wow. You got good genes,
That Norwegian gene is pretty darn good. But she would just pat Dad's little, you know, like his chest and say, "How come you drive a car like you do and you don't have the car like Robert?" And Dad would say, "Because I don't have the car payment Robert has."
Wow.
But she had no preferences between any of the kids. They were all her babes.
Yeah. Wow. How do you sum up your father if someone was to ask you, and you had to put it in just a couple of sentences? How do you do that? And I know it's a hard question, but I mean, how can you?
It's a terribly hard question because I'm faced with that question quite a bit, especially at film festivals and things, and comparing the two brothers and comparing them publicly and comparing them privately. My father loved life. He loved people, and he loved to make people smile. He loved to make them happy. And Bob was, believe it or not, kind of shy and very withdrawn. So it at first appearance, he could seem to be rather gruff and kind of unkind or unconcerned. But that wasn't it at all. But Dad one of Dad's favorite things was to just go into a little greasy spoon and sit down and talk to people and sing. But one of his favorite film festivals was the Lone Pine Film Festival out in California at the base of Mount Whitney, where they did hundreds and hundreds of Westerns. And Dad actually did a Twilight Zone there. He did
right? He played Ace, the character Ace.
Yeah, that was the one with the gold was filmed in.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, that was the one filmed in Lone Pine. So Dad would go to this film festival, and Dad's been gone 16 years, and I still have people that look at me and start crying because they miss him so much. He was like the Pied Piper. Everybody wanted to be around him and be with him. But with Uncle Bob, they wanted to be around him in kind of awe, because he was so bigger than life.
I mean, they both were just great at what they did. I forgot that, right? He played Ace. I don't know. That just popped into my head. I don't know how I forgot that. That's one of the great episodes where the gold was useless, right? Gold was, you know, at the end, I'm spoiling it for people.
Yeah, Mr. Garrity and the Graves was the other Twilight Zone he did, and I loved that one too.
Oh, my God, yeah. Your dad was a wonderful actor. What a talented man your dad was. And he could play different roles and so differently.
I laugh and say that he'd take his teeth out too, so that gave him double the chance of getting the role.
Wow. Just wonderful to talk to Cindy Mitchum. Everyone, if when we have it, have more information, we'll have Cindy on again, them Ornery Mitchum boys. That's a keeper for any fans of not only the Mitchums, but it's got to be a history lesson in Hollywood and a time period. And again, they're just not making any more.
It does. Yeah, I'm sorry to interject, but it does. It covers seven different 70 years.
Yeah.
Of history, so you get quite a time capsule of of the events and get a feel of what's going on in the world and how people thought and how they behaved.
Well, Cindy, we're up against the clock. Give us a website or a social media site where people can contact you and touch base with what you're doing.
The best way right now would be on Facebook, and I'm just Cindy Mitchum Asbill. A-Z-B-I-L-L is my married name, so it's Cindy Mitchum Asbill.
Well, congratulations on everything that you're doing. I know it's a lot of work. I know it's a labor of love, and I can't wait to see your finished project, whether film, book, or a combination of the two. Cindy, I do want to thank you for being here.
Joe, thank you for having me. It's been a blast. It's been a very quick hour.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I want to thank everyone for tuning in. Cindy Mitchum has been my very special guest, and she's a historian in her own right, and just wonderful. She's the keeper of the flame of them ornery Mitchum boys. Her uncle, Bobby, that's Robert Mitchum, and her dad, late great John Mitchum. Just Google them both and you'll see the stories, but you're hearing them straight from the daughter and the niece. Cindy Mitchum, again, has been our very special guest. Frank McKay signing off. We'll see you all next time on